Hey, you, my entrepreneurial friend, of 10 years of running my coaching business, I am going to finally teach business. And of course, I'm going to teach business with human design. Because the thing that I've discovered over the last decade is that the way everyone else taught me to run a business didn't freaking work for me. So over this last decade, to create a multiple seven-figure business, I've broken all the rules. I have done everything my way. I have looked experts in the face and downright said no, all to create something I love with greater ease and flow that literally is changing the world. And the best part is it doesn't feel like work at all. It feels like I get to hang out with my best friends and I am having a huge impact on the planet at the same time. So if you own a business that you want to finally maybe start, grow, or even scale, then come and join me on the 9th of May to discover how your human design can create the most beautiful, authentic success for you. For all the details, follow the link in the show notes. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Human Design Podcast with me, your host, Emma Dunwoody. I'm a qualified master coach and human behavior specialist, as well as being a qualified human design coach. And I work with clients every single day to answer the big questions. Who am I? Why am I here? And what is my purpose? I also assist them to transition from the person they think they should be to the person they really are on the inside. I teach people how to actually live their design instead of just knowing it. And if this is something that you want to do too, well, stay tuned or reach out for private coaching or Human Design Unpacks, where I show you exactly how to live your design. Hey, hey, everyone, and welcome to today's podcast. Well, this one, it's been a long time coming. This has been something that are a topic within my human design community for a really, really long time. And that is human design and parenting. It was actually in my membership, I would say maybe late September, early November, that the discussion just kept coming up. So of course, I put out to the universe, I'm like, okay, universe, where's my human design specialist? Where is she or he for that matter? And, you know, being a manifesting generator, I have to wait for something to respond to. Now, for those of you who know me well, you know, I don't spend much time on social media, but this one morning I happened to be on social media. I saw someone's face pop up on the stream and I'm like, isn't that weird? She's a human design parenting specialist. I'm going to reach out. So this is how this whole journey with the beautiful Kristen Shorter began. And, because, of course, I'm a parent, I wanted to have a real experience with Kristen first and see how she works with families and human design and how that process goes. And it was such an incredible experience. So we have today Kristen Shorter, who is a human design parenting specialist and a freaking rock star in my world. So, Kristen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Emma. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
You're so welcome. Now, can you please just tell my listeners a little bit about your background? I mean, you, again, one of the things that I do bang on a lot about on my podcast is real human design experts, and you are the real deal. So can you tell people a little bit about your background, how many years you've been doing this, and, you know, what brought you to human design?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually became a mother very young, at the ripe age of 18. And wow. I never got married at that age, but I was looking for a husband at that time. I was like, I grew up Christian. And I always believed, like, the message I heard from the church was a man needs to lead your family. And I was looking for a husband because I needed to be led, and I found one. Did not use a lot of discretion in choosing. And after 4 years and three children later, we got divorced, and I was in a panic. I was like, I will never find anyone to lead me or my children. And that's when I realized, oh, I have to lead my family.
Oh, I love that. So, I just got goosebumps as well. Like, this is so beautiful. And for all the women listening, you know, like, that is a profound message. We don't need anyone to lead us, ladies.
Yes, definitely. And I, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Yes.
And by chance, the same way you found me was actually the way that I found my mentor, Karen Curry Parker. And she was having a speaker's boot camp. And at the time, I was actually working with the University of Austin, University of Texas in Austin, as one of their speakers for some nonviolent communication work that had just been initiated at the state level. And I was like, wow, I need the speaker's boot camp. But when I looked at the price, it was $5,000. And I had just gotten divorced. I had 3 children. I'm a single mom. There's no way I could afford that. So I basically harassed Karen for about a week. Every day I would handwrite her a letter, email her, and call her. And because she was in her hermit phase, she was a 6-line profile, she was on the roof hiding out. And after, you know, getting all of these calls and emails, she finally returned my call and was like, look, I want you to come as my guest. You know, I want you to be here. I can tell you're supposed to be here. You can tell you're supposed to be here. So come as my guest. And I was just in tears after we got off the phone. I was like, oh my God, yes. And I didn't know what, but I knew something was going to just change my life. And whenever I arrived, the very first thing she did was run this weird looking chart. And a design chart. And it was amazing the accuracy that it gave me. And immediately all of the choices I made started making sense. Oh, that's why I did that. Oh, I should have listened to this. Hindsight became 2020.
Yeah.
And then I was like, run my children's charts. You know, I gotta figure this out for them too. And by the end of the boot camp, she had gifted me her human design program, certification program, levels 1 through 4. And in 9 months, she was having a level 4 certification. And I made it my goal to be at that certification and get certified as level 4 human design specialist. And I did, I made it. And she was very surprised, very thankful that I didn't waste, you know, all of that information that she gave me, because in the past that had been her experience. I went and I got certified. And after that certification, she offered me a job. I started running charts for her, and then I started doing more and more responsibilities, and I worked for her for about 10 years.
Yeah, wow.
And during that time, I was able to take all of the classes that she offered and continue getting more certifications and learning and studying deeper into human design, all of the mysticism, all of the parenting, and it's been incredible. And so my daughter, who I had at a very young age, and her brothers, who there's about a 6-year age gap, were raised very differently. One is before human design and one is after human design.
Amazing.
And my daughter has shared with me that she loves how I'm parenting now, but she is also really disappointed that the mom that I am for her brothers, I didn't know how to be for her when she was that age. And it was a very powerful realization that she had and gave me. But the fact that she was even able to tell me that just was testament to how aware and non-reactive human design has made me. It's made me deeply understand my children, my emotions, and help them understand that too.
Yeah. That is incredible. What a freaking cool story. I love it. And isn't it? It's so true, right? Like, when the student is ready, the teacher arrives. And,
yes.
You know, you having to sort of reach for those, your own expectations was probably one of the things that really drove you, because it sounds like in the beginning, Karen was kind of had one expectation, but you blew that out of the water. Lucky for all of us.
Yes. And my family.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So tell me, like, I love that story that your daughter shares with you. So what would you say, what's the specific differences? I mean, I think I just shared with Kristen before we got on to the recording, Like, I know, guys, like a lot of my audience, a lot of you guys out there, you actually, you're looking and studying your kids' charts before you're even studying your own. So I know how important it is that we understand our children's charts. So what do you reckon the specific differences were that your daughter noticed between her experience and the boy's experience?
I would say the difference is traditional parenting versus conscious parenting. You know, now more and more children are coming into the world and they have a higher consciousness.
Yeah.
And because of that, the traditional parenting tactics that are based in control, based in fear, shame, intimidation, getting your child to obey don't work, you know, and it shuts them down. And so today, more than ever, our children are showing us that they are their own sovereign, unique individual beings. They have their own journey. And just because we brought them into the world doesn't mean that we get to dictate how they live their time, how they spend their time on earth.
Yeah, that is so powerful. And I think that's one of the things that we find the most challenging. You know, I know for me as a parent, I inherently know that. I inherently know that my job is to empower responsibility and love my children. Like, this is kind of really all my job is. However, I'm also, being a behavioralist, I'm so conscious of the things that I still do to this day where I try to be like, oh God, it's really hard just to trust you. Like, it's really hard to let go and allow you to make those mistakes or to just be that big expression of an outward explosion that you can be and be okay with it, you know? So,
yeah.
So what would you say to parents that right now they're challenged with their kids' behavior? They don't want to shut them down, control them, and do all those things that their parents did. However, when they don't do that, they're feeling more and more like out of control or like they're not actually helping their children. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. There are four emotional needs that every child has, and these emotional needs actually don't go away. So this works on adults as well, because most of us never learned how to get our emotional needs met. But my work, part of it centers around Rudolf Dreikers, who was a psychologist, and he studied behavior in children, specifically how to get them to cooperate without punishing them and without rewarding them.
Mm.
So he saw the negativity in the reward as well as the punishment.
Mm.
And, you know, today, so, you know, since we are born, you know, our children start competing for mom's attention. Mm. That's one of the first things that we learn as a child. We get brought into the world and we're competing with dad for mom's attention. And then we have more siblings and we're competing with our siblings for mom and dad's attention. And then we go to school and we compete academically and athletically. And that doesn't stop when we go to college. And then we go to work and we're still competing there. And at some point, we're supposed to learn how to have this cooperative relationship with another person and build a family.
Mm-hmm.
But we never learned how to cooperate. And so that is one of the things that his work really centers around. And the way that he teaches this is by you, the parent, being emotionally attuned to your own emotions. And so many of us have numbed ourselves out because we feel so much. You know, it's very painful to have all of this pain and have all of these big emotions. But you can actually understand your child a lot better whenever you are emotionally attuned to your own emotions. It allows you to be emotionally attuned to them. And so every child has these emotional needs, and adults have them too. One is attention. You know, attention is a legitimate human need. It never goes away, no matter how old you are. And what Rudolf Dreikers found was that whenever our child needs attention, they will actually annoy the parent. You know, imagine making a pot of coffee in the morning and you make the best coffee and you use the best, you grind the coffee beans and you made it perfectly with whatever, like milk and cream and maybe some cinnamon in there. And then your partner comes in and they want some of your coffee. but they didn't make any of the coffee. They didn't help you make any of the coffee. They're not going to help you clean up any of the coffee. And you're a little perturbed, but you say, okay, so you give them a little bit. And they quickly drink that little amount of coffee that you gave them and they come back for more. And after three or four times of this, you're going to start feeling annoyed. Well, that is the same with attention. You know, whenever your child annoys you, their behavior annoys you, it's because quality attention isn't being given. Okay.
Wow. I think that is so profound, because I would say that this is predominantly what we all experience. And it's that piece, isn't it? The quality attention is not being given. You know, you talk about attention being one of the core emotions that they need, or the core emotional needs. I actually use the core needs, which is human need psychology, something Tony Robbins did. And one of the core needs is significance. So I'd say those two go hand in hand. You know, it's that feeling of needing to be, to matter, to be valued, to be significant. And when people do significance unresourcefully, that's what they do. They become irritating. They are constantly searching for significance and, you know, talking themselves up and all of those things. And so tell me how specifically do we handle this when our kids are being annoying? Let's all be honest. Mm-hmm. We have those experiences being annoying. We're like, oh my goodness, you need attention. That's the last thing I want to give you right now.
How do we
work with that? How do we work with that?
Well, one of the things we have to learn how to do is be present.
Yes.
A lot of the times we're so distracted that we're not even giving quality attention to ourselves, let alone our family, our loved ones.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh,
yeah. And these are people that you would die for. You would, you know, would jump through into a burning building for, but you won't be present and give them your undivided attention. Second is the attention needs to be child led. And the parent uses reflective listening, meaning you are paraphrasing what the child is saying. You're not commandeering the conversation. You know, if your child says, hey, mom, come look, I want to show you this butterfly. And you go outside and you're like, oh, wow, did you know where butterflies come from? They start out as a caterpillar and then they morph into something that can fly. All of a sudden, you've just taken over the conversation. And your child is like, yeah, but I wanted to show you the colors on the butterfly. Now the butterfly's gone, you know? And so when you are using reflective listening, you are letting the child lead the conversation and they feel heard, they feel validated, they feel seen, they feel like they're making an impact on you. And that need is getting met at a quality level. And what's really interesting, although it seems paradoxical, is the more quality attention you give your child, the less attention they need.
That's so cool. I was just about to ask that question. I was going to say, like, because counterintuitive responses, I'm always like, the counterintuitive response is usually the one, right? The one that'll work. So I was about to say, like, how much quality time does that mean that they need? Like, because instantly there's this fear in me, like, oh my God, I don't have 6 hours a day to talk about the bloody butterfly. And I might be a little bit loopy if I do. But my instinct was that if we give them this quality time, does that mean that it actually, they need less attention because we're fully theirs for that time?
Right. You are completely present and you see them at every single moment, and nothing will fill their cup up more than being seen.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I love that. And it is crazy, isn't it? Because we live in this world where we feel so stressed and we're running from one thing to the other. And we think that if we just make sure that they're doing the things that they want to do and they're going where they want to go and they've got the support that they need, like they'll be okay. But actually all we're doing is we're muddying the attention water because we're giving them all these other things to try and fill their attention, but the one thing they actually want is our quality in the moment with them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
so, undeniably. Well, one thing I have to ask is, so what are the other needs? We need to know what these other needs are, these emotional needs. So we've got attention, number one.
Okay, if their attention needs don't get met, then they go into power struggles, and every child needs to feel powerful.
Oh, yeah.
and they don't get their attention needs met, okay, then they really want to feel powerful because they want to make you pay attention to them. And so here you're going to engage in a lot of power struggles. You're going to hear no a lot, you know, whenever your child turns four, and whenever your child is going through puberty, you're going to have a lot of struggle during that time too. So when your child is, when their behavior is communicating this power struggle, you, the parent, will feel stubborn. You will feel like, I will make you do this. And it's very interesting because sometimes if you and your child are having a power struggle, like you're like, hey, get off the computer, or, you know, come pick up the Legos. And they're like, no. Or they keep playing with the Legos. Come on, pick up the Legos. You need to pick those up. I already told you need to pick those up. And they're like, oh, I'll do it. I'm doing it. And you're looking at them and they're not doing it, but you feel annoyed. That is actually attention. If you feel like, you know what, I will forcefully take my child's hand and make them pick up every last Lego, that is power. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Because they're actually, even though we're not doing the thing that they chose for us to do and give them attention for in the first place, so what I would call the resourceful attention, they're like, screw you, I'll get unresourceful.
Yeah.
yeah.
Exactly. Negative attention. Yeah, totally. And so to get out of the power struggles, you need to give your child choices. They need to be able to make their own choices, and this is pretty hard, but make their own mistakes. And the only way they are going to learn from their mistakes is if those mistakes have consequences. Okay. And so that has to be upheld and maintained. And because if they make a mistake, but then, you know, they spill a drink, but mom's the one cleaning up the mess, they don't learn. Okay. Yeah. So you have to have consequences. And by the way, consequences does not mean punishment. Consequence has to make sense, and it has to be the most logical or natural thing that would happen if they didn't do something. So for example, if your child leaves their bike out in the yard, in the driveway, and dad runs over the bike, that is a natural consequence. A logical consequence would be if they leave their bike out and mom puts up the bike, the natural consequence would be they don't get to play on the bike for a couple of days, or they have to pay mom some money in order to get the bike back, because they're not taking care of it. So it has to make sense. It can't be, oh, you're grounded from your phone. You know, like, that doesn't correlate to the bike. We have to keep the bike in mind. And so that, whenever we start taking away, you know, the phone privileges and in electronics, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't register as a consequence. That actually registers as a punishment. And that's the traditional way of parenting that doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, so I've got so many questions about consequences, because so child number one, and I mean, you know, now know my kids well, child mm-hmm. number one, we always, you know, it was something for me that my mum raised me with. She was always like, I'm always here for you, but you're the one who has to deal with the consequences. So as I went into parenting, I'm like, yeah, I can do this. I can, you know, let him climb a tree and fall out of a tree. I can let him fall down, or I can let him whatever. Mm-hmm. And child number one, totally like, okay, we've got this. And we now have a 13-year-old who takes responsibility. Now, child number two, and again, you notice, like, this was more challenging. Like, one of the mistakes I know for sure that I'm making, and you've just mentioned it here, is that we definitely have made the correlation between if he doesn't, you know, do what he said he's going to do, or if there's some sort of consequence, that we will take away a screen, that it's not related. So I realized, okay, that's definitely something we can do. But often with him, is it's like the consequences, he just doesn't care. It's like he doesn't care. So if he left his bike out in the rain and it got rained on, child number one, like, Coop would be like, oh my God, and never do it again. Whereas child number two, Oscar, would just be like, whatever. So how do we deal with those children that potentially are a little bit more challenging, or that the consequences, like I'll often say with Oscar, it's like he's Teflon, like it just doesn't matter to him. So how would we handle that?
So what's really interesting is with children like that, whenever something like that initially happens, so he leaves his bike out and it rains, use that as a learning experience. Come to him and say, look, Oscar, your bike got rained on and I'm not okay with that. I know you're okay with that, but I'm not. So I need to come up with a consequence of what will happen the next time you leave your bike out. And there's actually a sophisticated way of doing this. It's not just like the parent makes the final, all the choices in this, but you come to your child and get a piece of paper, get a whiteboard out. And at the top, you know, you're going to write what the intention is. It's like to stop leaving bike out. And you ask him, the next time you leave your bike out, what will happen? And he'll say, nothing. So you write it down. And at this point, y'all are brainstorming. Okay. So you don't say no, yes or no. You just write everything down because you don't want to impede anyone's inspiration. And you want him to know that no matter what he says, you are listening and you're taking it. Yeah. So maybe he says, starts out with nothing. And then maybe you say, okay, you're grounded from your phone for 3 years, and y'all are just exaggerating a lot. But eventually what will happen is y'all start coming up with ideas that are relevant. Then after y'all are done brainstorming, you can't come up with anything else and he can't come up with anything else. Then y'all each get an opportunity to cross something off the list. So he takes a turn and he crosses off, I'm grounded for 3 years. And then you take a turn and you cross off, nothing happens, right? Until you're left with one or two choices that y'all both agree on. You sign your name to it and you use that for 1 week. And the reason you use it for 1 week is because it might need tweaking. And if you do it for 3 days, that's not enough time. And if you do it for 2 weeks, that's too much time. So I've found that 1 week is like the perfect time. And if it needs tweaking within that week, you don't tweak it. If you find out that, oh my God, this isn't working, I can't do this, you'd be like, well, we're not talking about it again and making any changes until 1 week. And that allows them to feel the consequences, okay? And to choose better, make better decisions. And so after a week, you come to him and say, hey, is this still working? Is this consequence still working? Is it, and you might say, look, this consequence isn't working. It's not affecting you. And so, or it's, you're still leaving your bike out. And so now you redo it. And you might say, okay, we're going to give your bike away to somebody who will take care of it. You know, that might be something that you put on the list. And if he agrees to that, then y'all get to choose who to donate his bike to. And he doesn't have a bike to ride it the next time that all his friends are riding bikes or his brother wants to ride a bike.
Yeah, I just have to jump in on this because this is a really key point. You know, one of the things that when we did our sessions together, I realized, because obviously, as you, again, listeners, you've heard me say it a million times, we are always projecting our stuff onto others. You know, yes. People's the way people are, it's we see the world as we are, not as it is. So one of the things that we identified when we were doing some sessions with me, with the kids, is that I had been projecting as a kid. I had felt like I'd missed out. I was an only child. I missed out on having a brother or sister. My parents were always at work and I was in an environment where I saw kids do, we were sort of middle income, but I went to a very elite school. So I saw these children going skiing and Disneyland and all these places and I didn't. So I had this piece of me that I honestly didn't realize was still in there that was projecting onto the kids. So I would go through this process with Oscar, and the bike thing just reminded me, it's such a perfect metaphor, because I would be like, I don't want you to miss out on a bike. So I would be the one almost negotiating, yes, trying to get him to understand, whereas, it was like just having someone make or bring that awareness to my attention is like, no, actually, just give the bike away. He doesn't care about missing out. Yeah. That's all you, Emma. And I think this that was so profound, that's all me, that stuff that just needed healing in me. If we give his bike away in this metaphor, not that we're giving his bike away, but that to him wouldn't be this thing that I've been trying to avoid, if you know what I mean. Like, mm-hmm. It's more about, letting him go through the process, have the consequences, learn the lesson, as opposed to me trying to avoid him learning the lesson without even realizing I was doing it.
Yeah.
So cool. Right. Okay. So we've got the emotional need of attention. Then if they don't get the attention, it moves to this power struggle, right? Mm-hmm. Then what happens after the power struggle?
If their power needs don't get met, then it goes into revenge. And essentially, the child doesn't feel loved. And every child needs to feel unconditionally loved and be in a love frequency as they grow and mature. And so if they don't feel like I can have mom and dad's attention and I'm not able to make my own choices and take responsibility for my choices, they don't feel loved. And so they go into revenge. And essentially what they're doing is trying to hurt mom and dad, trying to hurt the ones that they love. Because if I can hurt you, hurt your feelings, that means you still care about me. When you're apathetic to me, that means you don't care about me. And so not giving me attention and not letting me make my own choices, I feel like you don't care. And so if you, the parent, feel like you want to hurt your child, like spank them or ground them forever, you know, then you know that your child has moved into revenge. Revenge is not easy to get out of. And it starts with one, not punishing your child, not giving them any consequences. You have to reconnect and restore the relationship. And that starts with giving them quality attention and giving them choices.
Yeah, wow. And again, it's that counterintuitive thing because we've been so conditioned to, you know, when people get to that stage or when kids get to that stage, you know, like that's when they have to go to, you know, we used to joke, and obviously it was just a joke, this isn't true, but we'd be like, we'll send them to military school, you know?
Yeah.
but this is the thing, like it's the counterintuitive response. It's that moment, you know, like I remember Justin used to work in a business that they looked after, or they did a lot of work with homeless kids. And this guy that he knew had a place where kids would come and stay for a while and move on. And he actually said they would often come, and as they would arrive, you know, the one thing he would do is remove all the rules. If they wanted to sit up and watch the television until 2 or 3 a.m., they could do it. You know, he took all the rules away and just let them be. And, mm-hmm. you know, he would have that time with them. If they wanted that time with them, he would always sort of put out invitations to come and play a game of cards. But he would literally just take all of the rules and regulations away. And he would say it would take somewhere between 5 and maybe 10 days, and all of a sudden these kids would put themselves in a routine. They would want to spend more time with him, mm-hmm. and things would really settle down because they were so used to being told what to do, when to do it, and they're wrong because they're not doing it, that it was that counterintuitive response that was the thing that gave these kids a real breakthrough.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that connection before correction, putting the connection and making that child feel loved and important and valuable over then making the child obey or be something.
Yeah, I love that. Connection before correction. And do we run mini cycles of this? Because, I mean, what I wonder straight away is are there times where, let's say, Justin and I are super busy, we've just finished the end of the year, like end of the schooling year. So the kids have been super busy. We've been super busy. We're all trying to get stuff done. Like, is it possible that we can almost move into like a mini revenge cycle where they kind of...
Absolutely.
Yeah, brilliant. Because we talk about a reset in our family. So sometimes mm-hmm. when it all goes to pot, we're kind of like, all right, we need a reset. So yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
I do see revenge happen in younger children whenever there's a new family member in the house. Like if mom just had a new baby, or maybe if a grandparent or someone who is kind of needs a lot of help and attention, it takes away attention from the child. Or I also see it whenever a parent works away from home for long times, like they're in the military or something like that. And so typically though, you will see this just happen naturally whenever children go through puberty, because that is the time that they have all of these hormones coursing through their body that make them feel very powerful and independent and like they know everything. And that's the time that they really need connection with the parent that does not include correction. Okay. And what you'll find is that when you connect with your child, naturally they will correct themselves. When you are showing them and modeling for them how much you care about them and the connection is the most important thing, they will naturally correct themselves. And so,
that's so beautiful. Sorry to interrupt, but I just have to, like, I have to highlight that point that if we trust them, if we show them that we love them unconditionally, that we hold space for them to fall down, make mistakes, that they will naturally correct themselves. I think that that's such a profound and important point.
Yeah.
So cool.
So the last stage of the cycle, if their attention needs aren't getting met and they don't feel important, if their power needs aren't getting met and they don't feel powerful, if they are they don't feel loved unconditionally and they go into revenge and that still doesn't work, then they go into what's called inadequacy. Inadequacy is the emotional need to feel capable. Okay. They feel like no one cares about me and no one trusts me with anything. And this is the hardest to get out of. It's very rare to see children in this, but it's almost like they just give up. They give up trying. They give up experimenting with life. They give up their hobbies and fun things that they like to do. And they just kind of go vacant. You know, they just kind of disappear. So to get them out of this.
So sad.
It's very sad. It's also very rare. But we do see this in the baby of the family, because typically these are children, especially if you have a big family, these are children that don't learn to talk until they're like 4 years old because everybody's doing everything for them, you know?
Yeah.
And so this will take more effort initially. But what you need to do is give the child a task, and you will do the task with the child, not for the child. And you will show the child how you want something done. For example, if you want them to do a chore, like folding towels, show them how you want the towels to be folded. And you will do that chore with them, and then you will let them do it by themselves. Okay. This is the child that you're not going to say, okay, you know what? I'm going to get the car warmed up. I need you to finish brushing your teeth, grab your backpack, turn off the lights and lock the door and meet me in the car in 2 minutes. This child, you will come back inside and find them like playing with their Legos because they don't know what to do. Like they already forgot. Okay. It was just so overwhelming. And so you will have to be with the child, but let them brush their teeth. Let them turn off the lights. Let them get their backpack. Let them lock the door and then go out to the car with them. So initially it takes more time and effort, but what you do for their self-esteem is priceless.
Yeah. And that's it, isn't it? Again, that's that place where we just have to hold space and be present with them and allow them to go, like, because we are kind of holding their confidence as they're building their confidence in that that way. Wow, that's incredible. Thank you. So can we talk about now really how, from a human design point of view, how can we parent better? I mean, one of the things that I noticed straight away is that just made sense. Like my kids made sense. You know, so much, even when we were having our sessions, like the simplest things, you know, we know that Oscar has so much more individual circuitry and we know that Cooper has so much more, the more tribal circuitry. So just having that tiny little overview of them being man-gen, so they're super busy, they've got lots of energy, they are multi-passionate, they're non-linear, that they need to be responding to things and that they tell us, like one of the things that I've shared with you and I've shared with the audience is that as much as possible, we allow them to say, Mummy, I'm going to the park. Is that, you know, is that cool? Or can I be home at da 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 da? Instead of having to constantly ask permission. So when someone first comes to their human design charts for their kids, what do you recommend that they really, you know, what are your top maybe three tips that are going to really help them parent from a human design frame?
So on the most practical level, human design shows you where and how to access your body's consciousness as a decision-making tool. And ultimately, it will sync you up and your child up with who they really are, their inner authority. And it allows them to trust themselves instead of the lotus of control being outside themselves, trying to people please, trying to get a reward. That lotus of control goes back inside where it's supposed to be. And from that point is where they make decisions.
Yeah.
So for sure, understanding what your child's strategy and authority are. Okay. Another thing is, you know, a lot of times the strategy and authority, it is allowing you to stop making decisions with our mind. Mm. You know, our minds are exhausted. They're
constantly— Tell me about it.
They're constantly looking for guidance and answers. And the natural state of mind is to be at rest. You know, it's designed to communicate, to play, to research, but not to make decisions. And when we use it to make decisions, it causes anxiety and mental stress. And so that is one of the biggest things that human design really takes off of your expectations for your child, you know, teaching them how to make decisions that are correct for them.
Yeah. So this is cool. And even some guidance on that would be great. So I have, obviously, I've got two boys who are both sacral authority. So for me, I kind of feel like this is easy. We've taught them to pay attention to the noises that they make. We've taught them, we ask some questions that they can say yes and no to. So, so I feel like that sacral response is relatively easy to teach and to, you know, empower them.
Understand, yeah.
Yeah. But tell me, like, how do we help our kids? I mean, I've got emotional authority and yes, telling me to slow down. But as a kid, I always had this big energy with my 3420, but I also have emotional authority and I'm a split definition. So I have these two very different energies. So I'd love to hear your view on how we might teach our children to listen to emotional authority, splenic authority, and probably even some of the, you know, like a mental projector or, you know, a manifestor that potentially is an ego manifestor. So there's all that openness going on in their body.
One of the things I want to address when it comes to the emotional authority is wanting happiness for our children. You know, one of the things that a lot of parents will, whenever ask them, what do you want for your child? It's some version of, I want my kids to be happy. But what if I told you the desire to want your kids to be happy is actually causing anxiety and stress? And I know that seems confusing, but our obsession with happiness creates unhappiness. Because if we tell our child to be happy, when our child is emotionally defined and has all these big emotions, what we're really communicating to our child is, don't be what you're being right now. I don't accept what you're being right now. And when you, the parent, are in resistance to your child's experience, it creates dysfunction, disconnection, disease. So, you know, having, you imagine your child having these big feelings and being told, be happy, be happy, be happy, you know, and the kid is like, I just want to feel what I'm feeling. And I want to feel like it's okay that I'm naturally feeling what I'm feeling without being judged.
Yeah. And this is like being an adult that has emotional authority. Like this is one of the biggest deconditioning, you know, we talk a lot about how we decondition our undefined centers, but we also decondition our defined centers. And this has been a massive journey for me because I grew up in a family where I don't know either of my parents' time of birth, but I'm pretty confident that neither of them had a defined solar plexus. But the other part is that my mum, she's very English. So kids are seen and not heard. You don't show emotion. Pull yourself together, Emma. You know, like emotion wasn't okay. I love my mum. Don't get me wrong. She's amazing.
Right,
she did the best job she could with what she had. Both my parents did. They were amazing. But I know that that's been a huge part of my journey. You know, a lot of the reason that I found myself in my late 20s with depression and panic disorder is because I couldn't express myself. And I literally had done such you know, such self-sabotage to a point that I was pushed that I had to in some way start to learn to express myself. So I think that what you're saying is so incredibly powerful, like just honoring our kids to have all their emotions, especially if they mm-hmm. have that defined solar plexus, because it's kind of crazy. Like the one thing when I was going through mental health, healing my mental health, all I could think about was I just want to feel happy. And mm-hmm. the thing that I also realized very early on is that my definition of happiness wasn't a mood, it was this feeling. So even if I'm faced with something that is scary or I don't understand or I don't want to do or it's something that's challenging, I can still feel happy. And I realized over time that it was just that inner certainty, that self-worth, that self-love and acceptance is what I had connected to happiness. Because happiness, as you say, is just, it's just one emotion on the emotional scale. It's mm-hmm. not the whole journey.
Yeah, definitely. When you take away the idea of wanting happiness, then you're willing to accept the fact that life is painful. And we then expect and trust our children to deal with disappointment instead of trying to make their life perfect so they don't have to deal with disappointment, because their disappointment actually triggers us, the parent. You know, it triggers our pain, and we don't want to address our pain. So we're constantly trying to fix our kids.
Yeah, so true. So tell me about the spleen. I think like having splenic authority, I know even working with adults, this is one of the ones where it's, especially if someone hasn't been listening to their spleen all their life because they've been told not to, it can be a journey even as an adult to start to trust it. But my instinct sort of tells me as kids, you're probably so much more connected to that instinct, to that intuition. Mm-hmm. So how can we teach our kids to trust that? How can we teach them with that authority or empower?
The spleen is this inner voice, this intuitive voice that says in a whisper, do this, leave now, don't go there. And when you shut that part down, and the spleen is also, it's in an instant. So as soon as that moment is gone, the whispers stop. And so if you don't take that advice right then and there, and you, it's gone, you know, that moment is gone. And the spleen is one of the things where we really have to learn to trust ourselves. That's one of the lessons of the spleen, because if we can't logically explain it, then we won't do it. You know, it doesn't make sense. And the spleen is something that is just going to come to you. It's not something logical. It's not even something that is, you know, right brain that's creative. It's more just like information that you're getting in the moment from your environment. And so trusting your children and asking them questions like, well, what is your inner voice saying? Or what is your intuition saying? That will help them learn to recognize that they have an inner voice, and that voice should be listened to. And that you, the parent who love them and care about them, you also want to listen to that inner voice that they have. And when they say, well, it's telling me to do this, then say, okay, well, let's do it, even though it may not make sense, even though we can't explain it, even though you may not want to do it, let's still do it and see what happens. And what you'll probably find, or that I found, because I have a sacral and I also have a defined spleen, it's so my spleen also gives me information in the moment. And one of the things that my kids and I have learned is like, hey, I'll tell them, look, I don't know why, but I just can't. The answer's no. I don't know why. I just know what I have to do is listen to this. And when you trust yourself and model that for your children, they will also learn to trust themselves.
Oh, that is so beautiful. So beautiful. And I think with all the authorities, it's that same part, that same piece is just to start languaging it from an early age, you know, like just start languaging, you know, what does your gut tell you? Or what does your instinct tell you? Or what is that little voice telling you? Or, you know, that emotional wave, just letting your kids ride it, like just letting them have time and space. Okay, we'll come back later. We'll see what you think in an hour. We'll see what you think tomorrow. That's super cool, like giving them space. So what about those, the other authorities where they're either, as I say, a mental projector or they're ego manifestor, where potentially there's a lot of undefined centers below the throat And they're getting, you know, very little guidance internally, and they're having to have to really learn to trust what the environment and the people feel like and make decisions from that place. How do we empower our kids to do that?
So ego authority can come in the projector or the manifester. And it's something, again, you just have to trust what you say or do spontaneously in the moment. The voice of the ego will speak, or it will move the body if you allow it to do so. It's about letting the words come up unfiltered and not saying what you think you're supposed to say. This authority has willpower, and it is unmistakably engaging or not. So it's either going to act spontaneously and be the center of the party or do something or take some type of action, or it's not. It's just going to sit back. It's not going to do anything.
Yeah. And this is the thing I love about the what you said about the will center, you know, like there is this part of that energy that again, I often see it can be very shut down, you know, and in our kids, empowering them to really be like, yeah, this is what I want to do. This is it. And like the word I love that you used as well was like letting whatever come up and come out unfiltered. Mm-hmm, so again, mm-hmm. like allowing them to trust what comes out of their mouth. This is all stuff that from the old way of parenting, this can be challenging because we weren't allowed to say what we want to say. We weren't yeah. allowed to trust our emotions. We weren't allowed to trust our gut or our instinct or be like, I'm in this place and it just feels wrong, so I want to leave. my mentor, the woman I did my training with, Kim Gould, so she's been doing human design since 2003. She actually talks a lot about, or she told me once about her son who has sacral authority. And then sometimes he'd be like, no, I just need to go now. And she would literally like take her son out of the pool, be like to her daughter, you just sit there. I've just got to take him home. And, you know, like that's incredible. But a yeah. lot of people, we don't have we just don't have the same. Maybe as a behavioralist, I'm about to say we can't do that, but that's not true. We can do whatever yeah. we want to do. But it's not as accessible for everyone to be that conscious of our kids' design to be able to give them that level of support.
Yeah.
So with your authority, ultimately what we're doing is we're making sure that we understand their authority and mm-hmm. then we're going on the journey, i.e. we're modeling effectively mm-hmm. how they can listen to and trust their authority. Is that right?
Right. And we're asking them questions so that they learn to tap in. And by the way, you can't do this unless you're being present. So you, the parent, have to learn how to be more present, not only with yourself, but with your loved ones.
Yeah. And this is a huge piece because you said early on in the podcast, you said like we're all struggling with this piece, that we don't give ourselves enough attention. And I'm banging on about this all the time with my clients. Like the first thing my private clients do is they are given this rundown of the thing of suggestions, you know, meditation, journaling, creating this routine and some boundaries and taking time for yourself to fill that time with whatever lights you up, whatever feels good. And this is something that one thing we cannot do is we cannot be something or give something we're not or we don't have. So if we're not giving ourselves attention, then we cannot physically, energetically give our children attention.
Right, so absolutely.
It's an incredibly important part. And again, counterintuitive because we're all like, but our kids need us or we have to do this. We mm-hmm. have to start to create these times for ourselves to give ourselves those that attention so that we can actually have the capacity to give it to our kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Beautiful.
So tell us, what's the next step? We've got their type. We understand. Do we talk to them about how?
Well, I do want to mention two more authorities, and these are strictly for projectors. The self-projected authority means that their authority is actually coming from their defined G center. And this is a deeply non-energetic, but still a very powerful being. And a lot of times projectors feel like they're not that powerful because they don't have these defined energy centers. And that's not true. Projectors, and as you know, because Justin is a projector, mm-hmm. they guide the energy of the world. And that is one of the most important jobs and probably one of the most frustrating jobs at times. But we really, truly need them. So the ability for this projector to listen and hear their own voice is going to be key, because their truth is going to be expressed through the core of their identity, their G center. So allowing their words to come up unfiltered is key, and hear the truth in their words. So this is a child or this is an adult that needs time to talk out what is correct for them. They need to be able to talk things out. And so if you have a child who is a projector, no matter what their authority is, you need to give them extra time so that they can talk out their decisions when it's time for them to make a decision for themselves. The second authority that I want to talk about is for the projector that doesn't have an identity center. They don't have a G center defined. They don't have a spleen or a solar plexus. They have maybe the head and the ajna defined. And this is called a mental projector. And so again, they have a lot of openness, and their guidance is coming through their open centers. So they're using other people as sounding boards in order to hear the truth or not in their voice can be very helpful. So being in the right environment is going to be key for this projector in order to hear the truth or not, you know, to be able to feel like they know what decision is correct for them first comes from being in the correct environment.
Yeah, beautiful. And when the projectors, whether it's self-projected or mental projected, when they're talking it out, mm-hmm. are they looking for guidance or someone else's information, or are they just trying to create clarity through talking it out? Does that make sense?
That's actually a really good question.
Yeah.
And all my coaching clients that are projectors, they figure everything out on themselves.
Yeah, that's what I was.
Because we need the sounding board.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's what I was leaning towards, because I have had the same experience that they don't. Mm-hmm. You know, like my projector clients, they don't necessarily need the wisdom, the guidance, the coaching. They need me just to be there for them to ask a question or to whatever. And then I can almost see the dominoes fall. You know, I've got mm-hmm. my projector mastermind people, and you know, like one of the things that she got so much out of the mastermind was, yes, there was a lot of learning, but it was the questions that she was given to implement everything, because then it was like, ah, these are the things that have helped me integrate everything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just thought that was really important, because often, whether we're parents or just humans, our masculine energy will come out and try to fix mm-hmm. things, and that's not the purpose. That's not the purpose. The purpose is to just be a sounding board. You know, I often say to clients, you know, make sure that sounding board, that person, is someone that you respect, someone that you trust, that you know isn't going to project their stuff straight onto you and give you guidance and coaching when all you really want is someone just to speak to mm-hmm. and have someone respond to you. And it's about you, not about fixing whatever it is coming out of your mouth.
And if they don't have somebody that can hold that space for them, they can use an animal or a couch. I mean, literally, they really need to have their voice projected out so they can listen to it.
I love that. I was just about to ask, because I've heard someone say, I literally just talk to my angels. I just talk out loud in the kitchen. And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty confident that's good. That's all good. Mm-hmm. I love that. Brilliant. Is there anything else that you want to add on authority?
No.
Beautiful.
We covered it.
So what would be the next thing as parents that we want to teach and empower our kids from their human design? Or is there something that we need to see from their human design to assist them, and maybe not necessarily even teach them, if that makes sense?
Well, actually, the way that you communicate with your child based on their human design type.
Beautiful.
You know, that's so beautiful and so important, because whenever a child is being communicated with correctly at a young age and by someone who, that is their parent, who loves them and guides them, they're going to emulate that relationship as they get older and become adults. And so when you have a generator type of child, you need to be asking them yes or no questions. You know, and even if they're, and if the, if they're going, because they can't say, yes, or no, it's because the question isn't good. So take the question and kind of break it down into as many questions as possible, instead of trying to cram three different questions into one thing. Or sometimes it's about timing. Like, yes, I want to do it, but it still feels off. So then I have to ask my daughter, well, okay, instead of, is this something you want to do? Is it correct for you to do this? You know, is the timing correct for you to do this? Do you need to wait in order to do this? So there's a few satellite questions that you can ask about timing, about things being correct, instead of just like, is, do you want to do this? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And even from a coaching point of view, you know, I call that chunking down. Like it's, mm-hmm. it's, instead of asking a big open-ended question, like getting some more specificity, you know? And I love that piece. Like, do you want to do this? Yes or no? If they don't know, well, would you like to do this tomorrow or another time? That's that. Is it something mm-hmm. that you want to do at some point in the future? And really being able to chunk down those questions, as you say, into specificity, I think that's really, really powerful. And we're asking small questions and more repetitions, which is helping them really tap into their authority.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, projectors and reflectors, you want to ask them open-ended questions and you need to be present while they talk it out. So you don't want to ask them, do you want this? You want to ask them, tell me what you would like. You know, tell me more about that. Elaborate on that. Tell me what that looks like in your mind. Tell me what your vision is. You know, when you ask open-ended questions, then they get to talk it out and go into five different paths in order to come back to the one path that's correct for them.
Yeah, brilliant. So in that process, as we're asking them the open-ended questions, we're literally just doing, you know, practicing really resourceful listening. So making sure that they yes. finish. We don't tell them what to do. We don't try to fix it. We're literally holding space for them to take this journey mm-hmm. back to, you know, making a decision.
Absolutely.
Beautiful. Awesome. What's next?
And then with the manifester, they actually get, their energy actually gets impeded whenever we ask them questions. Manifestors aren't designed to be asked questions. It kind of stunts the creative energy that the beings that they are. And so in order to allow that creativity to be expressed is, one, we have to be okay if they don't answer us. Okay. And two, we inform them. Instead of asking them a question, we will inform them. We might say, hey, it will help me if you tell me what you want for dinner, because I'm going to be cooking dinner in about 10 minutes. Or, I'm curious what you want for Christmas. You know, that informing them is going to be so much better for them, but sometimes they won't answer you and that's okay. The thing about a manifestor or even a manifesting generator is if you start informing them on the time, like, okay, I'm going to the restroom, you know, even things simple as that. I'm going to start cooking dinner now. We need to leave in 10 minutes, you know, or hey, you have an appointment for the dentist in 2 weeks, and then you have an appointment for the dentist next week. Okay, you have it tomorrow. Like, that informing really helps them be more at ease. And when you also inform them, and like, instead of saying, what do you want for dinner? Say, hey, tell me what you want for dinner, because that would be really helpful, because I'm going to be cooking in about 30 minutes and I might be able to cook something that you want if you tell me. And they might say, oh, I don't care. Or they might just be like, oh, I really want macaroni and cheese, or, you know, or something. And so that's how you want to communicate with a manifestor.
Yeah, that's so cool. And also, I'm so glad that you came around and said the manifesting generators as well, because I've just realized, like, one of the things that drives me to distraction is when people interrupt me when I'm in that flow. Like, mm-hmm. I find it really challenging. But as you were talking, I was like, oh, my goodness, I literally have said to my children in the past, I'd just like you to acknowledge that you heard me speak. Where actually they're both friends and they're in their creative flow. So I'm the one that needs to just be like, get over it, Emma. They are in their flow. They may not acknowledge that I've spoken. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Thank you. Brilliant. So is there anything else that you think that is really important from a human design point of view for us as parents to be practicing with our kids?
I think just being more present and understanding these emotional needs, which you actually don't even need their human design chart. But you can probably guess that, you know, the manifester is going to be a little bit more of a power struggle here. You're going to be a little bit more stubborn with them. You're going to have more power struggles with a manifester versus a projector is going to need more attention. You know, they're going to feel a little more irritating than maybe the manifester, who's a little bit more independent, but needs to make their own choices, and the generator and the projector need a little bit more attention rather than choices. So
brilliant. Amazing. Oh my goodness. I can't believe we've already been here for an hour and I have so many more questions, but I better let you get back to your own family. thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today, Kristen. It's been amazing.
Yes. Thank you for having me. And I'm looking forward to, coming back again.
Yeah, which is so exciting. And for all of you out there listening, Kristen, this is so exciting, is coming to run a session with me in my pro membership crew and going to be running some hot seats, do some parent, human design parental coaching. It's going to be so much fun. I'm so looking forward to it. I actually already have some people on the wait list. I'm like, well, I can't give you a spot on the hot seat quite yet because I haven't actually officially announced it. But yeah, so for all of you in the pro or thinking about joining the membership, you will get to have some real time learning with Kristen as well, which is super exciting. All right. Thank you so much. And of course, for all of you out there, I also want to say from my own personal point of view is that I had this one of the session packages that Kristen offers, and they were fantastic. We looked at all of our charts as a family. We looked at life purpose, you know, how to hold space for my kids for, you know, energetically who they're going to become. I would highly recommend it. So I'm going to put all of Kristen's details in the show notes. So you know, go check her out. She's amazing. Thanks again, Kristen. And thanks again, everyone, for listening. And I look forward to having you on the next podcast. Bye for now.
Thanks everyone, for being here all the way to the end of the podcast. I hope you got lots of value out of it. I certainly had a lot of fun doing it. Could I please ask that you share this podcast with friends if you found it valuable? And also, bonus points, could you leave a review for me as well on Apple? It would be greatly appreciated. If at any point you would like to be on the podcast, or you've got questions that you'd like me to discuss on the podcast, by all means, get on my socials and DM me. Everything you need is there in the show notes. Have an awesome day. Bye for now.